This is Sawyer Robertson, and you're listening to the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.
Welcome into the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com, presented by WellMed Medical Management. I'm your host, Grayson Grunhafer, and today I'm joined by On3 college football analyst JD Pakel. Thanks for coming on, man.
Dude, this is awesome. This is awesome. I think we spoke about this before we got on the air, but the beard, man. Like, I don't want to like rehash it too much, but the beard is nice. It's very, very nice. I'm taking some like Nutrafol pills because I got the hairline giving out on me. I'm doing it. So like, all I have to say, if I could grow that, I would grow that because it looks very good on you, right?
Man, I appreciate that.
Kids, you look very hot. All right,
man. This has been years in the making just to get it to be a patchy beard. It's not even great. The quality is subpar, but it gives me a little more features, makes me look a little, you know, not 22 and more 32, which is where I'm at. So
do you have any PEDs behind that? Or is that just all natty? That's just,
it's like, all natural, man. All natural.
Gosh,
man.
Gosh, some guys get all the luck, dude. Some guys get all the luck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. I was going to say, man, it feels like yesterday we were in the Sikkim 365 studio cranking out just these post-game shows, whether it was raining or whether it was thunderstorming or whether it was a win or a loss. We were just going out there and hanging out after those Baylor games, man. It's been far too long.
Dude, so fun. Tremendous memories. Yeah. Two, I am like forever indebted to you for allowing me to just ride shotgun on what you had already had like up and humming, which was the post-game show, which was all the content, pre-game. Like, you had a whole thing going, and then like I got thrown into the mix, and you could have been mean, you could have been dismissive, you were none of those things. And we're always, and still are, very cool to me, but like I will always remember that and always appreciate that. So,
man, you got to go death by fire. I mean, you just got to be thrown into it. And that's how I learned, and that's how everyone should learn. You just get thrown in, and then just here we go. And you did that in an extremely awesome way. Now you're at On3, and now you're on this show, which is great. It all comes full circle, and I love to see it. So today we're going to dive into Baylor specifically. We got to talk about the Bears, a very interesting year up and coming. I know Baylor fans are excited. The national media kind of split. The Big 12 specifically, we'll talk about that as well. And then I'll get your national thoughts, just a few of them at the end, talk about your favorites to win the championship. But I'm not going to bury the lead today. You have Baylor in the college football playoff as the 10 seed, and you have them facing Texas A&M in the first round at Kyle Field, and then losing to Ohio State in the second round. Man, what is it about the Bears that has you so excited and has you putting them in the college football playoff this year? Real quick, Sawyer Robertson has something to remind you about.
Want the latest information about your favorite team? Try out Sikkim 365 premium content the next 3 months for just $5 by clicking the link below.
And now back to the Bearcast. Man, what is it about the Bears that has you so excited and has you putting them in the college football playoff this year?
Well, we're on the same page here when it comes to just the wackiness of the Big 12. Like, I've said this before, you are a more intelligent person than me, but I'm breaking down the Big 12 in November, talking to our producer like, hey, walk me through this one more time. If X equals Y, then Iowa State's in. And it was just like all these different things that break a certain way in November. So with that being the pretense of how I was breaking down the Big 12, I'm saying, okay, still a conference on drugs probably. It's probably still going to come down to November. Baylor's November schedule is awesome. Like, I don't think either you or I expect Utah to be a team that's trying to make a bowl game again in 2025. But even with that being the case, like, Baylor doesn't play a team in those last four games that made a bowl game a season ago. So if that's one part of the equation, then the other part of the equation is we get Sawyer Robertson back, plus top 12 returning production in college football as a whole from a team that was pretty good a year ago. All these factors to me start to snowball to where I'm like, it's a wacky conference. Things are weird in the Big 12. I'm going to go with who I think has the best setup in the month of November.
And it's interesting because I feel like you're the only person that has brought up the second half schedule. I mean, you know, we've talked about it on the premium side and stuff when people are super plugged into Baylor, but from a national perspective, everyone just wants to talk about the beginning of Baylor's schedule, which is really tough. But to your point, by the time you get to November, like was the case this past year, everyone had a chance. And so you do need to be able to finish strong and make up some ground. And Baylor's schedule is definitely kind of trending towards that at the end. But what do you think about that first slate? Are they able to get through that and come out, maybe not clean, maybe not undefeated, but are they able to survive it? I think is the biggest thing.
I think that's the biggest part, right? Is just what you said. Can they get through it without just getting obliterated by the ASU, SMU, Baylor, you know, combo there, or Baylor, Auburn, excuse me, in McLean at Baylor. My big thing, Grayson, is I have been accused of being overly optimistic. I've been accused of being a little bit extra glass half full, which, like, if that's the way it shakes, that's the way it shakes. There are worse things to be called. But I will say, I think that the way Baylor's schedule ramps up with it creating a sense of urgency from the jump where Auburn comes to McLean, I kind of like that, man. Like at Baylor, when during my cup of coffee there, on the max squat, like buildup, the day before you go max squat, what they do is they put a number that I want to say is like 100+ pounds more than what you're going to squat the next day. The reason for, they just want your body to feel that, like feel what it's like having this heavy weight on your back. So your nervous system kind of kicks up a little bit. Long way to say, I think this is Baylor's way of kind of kicking up the nervous system for when they get into the wild card that will be their Big 12 slate. Because you could drop the game to Auburn, could drop the game to SMU and still be a team that wins the Big 12 and makes the playoff. I don't think that they're going to drop both those games personally. But just seeing that the first game with a roster in Auburn, a playoff team in SMU a year ago, I think it's going to serve them well when they get down the stretch there in the month of November.
Just looking at that Auburn game specifically, it's the first game of the year, and Baylor has a lot of guys returning. Baylor's got a lot of cohesiveness across the roster. Auburn is probably the most talented team, I think, roster-wise, that Baylor's going to face all year. I think there's definitely an argument for that. They have a lot of NFL talent, but are they going to be able to gel in their first game with a quarterback that is unproven at McLean Stadium against a team with so much cohesion? Is that going to be a problem for Auburn?
It's not the get right spot you would want, right? If you're Jackson Arnold, like you would hope, okay, guy who struggled with turnovers a year ago, kind of just a dark situation in Oklahoma, to be honest, with how it all unraveled for him. So you hope personally he can bounce back. If you're a Baylor fan, you personally hope it's not against your Bears, you know, and McLean, but you would hope you get like a ULM noon kick on the plane Saturday and not a weeknight on the road against a team that brings back Kalai and Baylor with a defensive head coach. So I like Auburn a lot from a roster perspective. I even like Jackson Arnold, to be honest with you. I think the guy kind of gets a raw deal from what he was at Oklahoma. But for that to be your first game where you're trying to establish some confidence, trying to get some like mojo and, like you said, gel and momentum and all those things, I don't like the way it shapes up for Auburn on that side. So I go back and forth because there is a part of you that says, well, Auburn is super talented. Who's to say Auburn doesn't flip the switch? But right now, it's very hard for me to lean anywhere besides Baylor at home at this point.
Is there a game that when you look at Baylor's schedule that you're like, man, that's going to be a really tough one, or maybe a sneaky trap game that you've picked at all when looking at their schedule?
Yeah, you know, I think the TCU game is super interesting to me because I actually think TCU is going to be the team that they play in the Big 12 championship game when it comes all down to it in Jerry World. The fact that it's TCU at TCU in the month of October, coming off a bye week, you just played Kansas State the week before, who knows where you're at record-wise. That to me, like I just, on the road, just a lot of factors that kind of feel a bit sneaky. I'm also, this is not popular to say probably on this platform, I'm pretty pro Josh Hoover with what he did a year ago. I know they lose some pieces for sure, but dude put up some numbers last year, Grayson. So TCU round one of what I expect to be a two-round fight would be the one that I maybe feel a little bit anxious about if I'm a Baylor fan right now.
Baylor's been terrible against TCU and specifically terrible on the road in Fort Worth. They have not had a lot of success there in recent memory. Obviously won the game last year on a game-winning field goal in McLean Stadium. So yeah, that's definitely a good call there and an interesting one. I have TCU rather high as well in my Big 12 standings. I have some belief in them. When you're looking at this Baylor team, when you're looking at this Baylor team and kind of separating the pack, I know you're a big quarterback guy and Sawyer Robertson is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Is he playing a big part in your kind of decision to have the Bears going as far as you do? And where do you think he ranks in the grand scheme of things in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think it has to be across the board in the Big 12. In the day and age where it feels like everybody has a new quarterback in college football, the Big 12 like missed that memo, I guess. And props to them because they have like half the league, it feels like, or maybe more than that with a returning starter. So with that being the case, I think Baylor has, it's hard for me to put him at number one in the conference, and maybe I'm falling for the Sam Levitt, you know, playoff performance, which I've been known to get romantic about those sort of things. But I think that the body of work that Sawyer Robertson had last year, without him being the guy going into the year, Grayson, like you and the entire site knows, like it was the Daquan Finn show rolling into last year. And we were excited about what he was going to be on the ground and all those things. And you fast forward the tape, Daquan Finn is now playing for Miami of Ohio. And he's, and now Sawyer Robertson's got a full spring and a full fall camp for the offense to truly be his. So the momentum plus what we saw last year, plus all the pieces back from an offense with Washington as well, 1,000-yard back. There's so many things around him too that gets me excited for the encore and Sawyer Robertson. So absolutely a big part of why, to me, he was a big insurance factor for them being a playoff team this year.
So I think you kind of hinted at where your kind of predictions lie for Baylor this year as far as record. But if you were to give a specific record for Baylor this year, where do you have them? Is it, you know, an 11-win team, you know, 11-2, 10-3 type? And where do you see them tripping up?
It's a great question. Specifically, I think they're going to be 11-2 with a Big 12 title win. We talked about the TCU game. I think that's one that you probably circle and say, okay, if you can, I mean, if you drop that first one, see them a second time, you got to feel pretty good about your chances. The game in Stillwater, Grayson, makes me a little bit nervous. And the reason why, I think between just that stretch of Arizona State and then to Oklahoma State, like regardless of what happens against ASU, you're going to have to deal with the emotion of that. So let's say you beat ASU. I mean, I've gone on record and said I think College Game Day could be in Waco for that one if things shape up how it's going to shape up for both sides of that equation. But let's say, you know, you beat ASU, vibes are immaculate, you're reading the press clippings, you got to go to Stillwater, Oklahoma, which is just – it's a tough turnaround, and it's tough to handle that kind of success going into a spot like that. I mean, the flip side is you lose to ASU, and then maybe you're fired up and going into the Oklahoma State game with some vengeance, some get right on your mind. So all that's to say is I think you probably drop one of those two, and then the TCU game will put you at 10-2 going into the Big 12 title game and 11-2 when you win it.
It's as simple as that, man. You just run right through an SEC team and a team that was in the college football playoff in a non-con. And
mic
just,
drop.
Yeah, it's mic just drop. An what easy play.
Am I wrong for liking not loving SMU? A lot of no. close games a year ago, it felt like.
So I actually have SMU losing to both Baylor and TCU. And a big reason for it when I was predicting stuff, when I was just looking through it, I don't think SMU's retooled on the defensive line enough to stop Baylor from running the football. And then they have a lot of holes in their secondary, which Baylor and TCU will take advantage of. I think the SMU-TCU game, I think, will be pretty close because defensively, I don't know if either team is going to be able to do a whole lot. Yeah. But against Baylor, I think the run game is going to be a little too much for SMU to deal with.
And I'm pulling up their schedule from a year ago. Like, Grayson, I'm counting 1, 2, 3 games in the regular season that weren't against like amazing teams that came down to one score. This is not to go down the SMU rabbit hole. I love Rhett Lashley. I think he's done an awesome job there. I even think SMU is in a great spot here moving forward. But like, you win that many one score games, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to trust that to carry over year in and year out. So I love the fact that we are in agreement there. I don't love SMU having a fall off, but I love that we're on the same page on SMU. It makes me feel smart with you saying that.
Yeah, I've been predicting the season, and you mentioned the Oklahoma State game, and I actually have Baylor tripping up against Arizona State in that big game in week 4, and then kind of getting right those next 2 weeks against Oklahoma State and K-State. That's kind of where I'm at. That's as far as I'm at so far in predicting the season, but that's kind of how I see the beginning of that kind of playing out for the Bears. It should be interesting, though. They got a lot of tough matchups, and to come out of that 5-1, I mean, you're probably looking at a top 15 team, if not higher than that, I would think.
I don't want to derail our conversation, but I've been fixated on this. I did a top games for the college football season going by every single week, and I put Baylor ASU for that specific week as the best game. And I got people telling me, like, that's crazy, LSU Florida's that day, da, 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 da. And I'm like, I think we're going to get game day for that game. I think there will be a situation where I think Baylor's probably undefeated going into that game. I think ASU's undefeated. Baylor maybe has one loss, maybe, but I don't think they lose both Baylor against Auburn and Baylor against SMU. Am I crazy here? I feel like I need like maybe some reassurance there on that.
No, my title for that week of predicting the season was College Game Day comes to Waco. So I'm in full agreement. I think that that's exactly what's going to happen. Arizona State's going to be undefeated going into that game. And I know they got Mississippi State. I don't think Mississippi State's going to be very good. And then they got Texas State, which is kind of sneaky. Texas State kind of had them on the ropes last year. And yeah. GJ Kenny is phenomenal. But I don't think they're losing that game. And then on the Baylor side of things, man, I mean, even if they're 2-1, that includes either a win over a team that was in the college football playoff last year or a win over an Auburn team that gets, you know, all the SEC love. So I think they would be ranked at 2-1. And if they're 3-0, you might be looking at a top 10 type matchup. At least in my eyes, you should be, if especially if Baylor's 3-0 with that schedule, you're probably looking at a top 10, at least top 15 team.
And I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that the other games that day, like LSU Florida, I believe is. I keep saying LSU Florida. I'm pretty sure that's the game. Like those teams both have pretty tough tasks early on in the season as well. Like I think Florida actually maybe doesn't. Excuse me. LSU plays Clemson early on. They could drop that game. It loses some shine. We'll see. I guess all I'm saying, I needed to hear it from another human being to be like, okay, cool. We're not out to lunch here. You know. Right. Sometimes you just need that.
Yeah. No, I love hearing the other perspectives because I feel like half the time I'm like, man, the Big 12 toss up, all these games, man.
Legitimate.
Every single time. So speaking of the Big 12, JD, let's talk about the Big 12 a little bit. And I think the biggest story that I kind of looked at all offseason, I feel like everyone's been kind of just hearing this story way too much is what I would say, is the Texas Tech story. This offseason where they're going to the transfer portal and they got the number one transfer portal class and everyone's hyping them up. A lot of people have them in their college football playoff, despite the fact that when's the last time Tech won like 10 games? Graham Harrell? And is that the only time they've done that?
Good poll. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. It's kind of tough. And so everyone's expecting this leap. What are your thoughts on Tech, their offseason, and Joey McGuire going into what is a pretty pivotal year, I think, for him?
I like Texas Tech. The portal class is such an unknown, I think, for all of us, just because you have the number one class, and a lot of that is because of the quantity. Not to say they didn't get good quality, but we can look at a lot of these other portal classes and we say, oh, Oklahoma got John Mateer. Oh, Carson Beck is going to, like, we can kind of see like the poster children for some of these portal classes. I don't know that there's somebody within the Texas Tech portal class that I'm like, that guy's worth a win for Texas Tech. The reason I like Texas Tech personally is because of returning production from a year ago. They're top 10 in the country. And Joey McGuire. Like I think that, I mean, this is kind of an unquantifiable, but I think people can and would run through a brick wall for Joey McGuire. Like I think that part of it has continued to permeate since he's gotten there. And so it's a cliche thing to say during August, but I do think the culture is super strong there. I think Baron Morton staying healthy would be massive. So the question is, to me at least, does that portal class separate Texas Tech from the pack that is what you just mentioned, all the toss-ups in the Big 12? Because I could see it. I don't know that I'm predicting it right now. It's also tough to have that many guys come into your roster and gel quickly. So a lot of variables, a lot of unknowns, but it is like that subplot where if it hits for Texas Tech, I think it'll hit in a big way.
Definitely going to need Baron Morton to hit, because in a league full of great quarterbacks and you kind of look at the top teams in the league, he's kind of in the middle, I would say, and he's been hurt a lot. So that's definitely kind of one of my bigger question marks for Tech, I think, going into this year.
And where's Will Hammond at in that whole equation? Right. Like, I feel very like people rave about that dude. And I'm like, I keep hearing how good he is. And Baron Morton, you would hope, is able to stay healthy. But what if he's healthy and just like kind of average? You know, like, is there a point where Joey McGuire goes, hey, this isn't, Will, get warm. Like, we need you, brother. We're down in the fourth quarter, and pick whatever Big 12 game you want. Like, I wonder what that kind of experience would look like and how quick the trigger is if Will Hammond is as talented as it feels like people are saying he is.
Right. Okay. So the next storyline that I need to talk to you about, JD, and it's one that we talked a little bit about before recording, but man, the national media loves Utah. They are just like up in arms. Everyone's projecting them to just roll through the Big 12 because last year they were such a good team. They just didn't have a quarterback. And that's the only reason they didn't win a bunch of games last year. Right. Well, this year they went in, they got a Devin Dampier, and everything's fixed. Or is it? What do you think about Utah this year?
on paper, it makes so much sense because of what you just said. Kyle Whittingham, he's going to handle the defensive side. If Cam Rising is healthy a year ago, they make the playoff. And, like, I love Devin Dampier, and I love his YouTube highlights. Now, full transparency, I didn't sit down and watch a lot of New Mexico last year. Hand up, that's probably on me. But 12 touchdowns and 12 picks doesn't really, like, excite me all that much if I'm going to go ahead and pick you to win the Big 12. Like, I think it's going to take, yeah, multi-dimensional offenses are going to be the teams that have to, you know, ultimately, like, emerge from this conference. But I think maybe even more specifically, like, for Utah, when they get into those rock fight games, or if they get down in some of those rock fight games and have to answer scores, like, what are you getting from a Devin Dampier? Not saying he can't do it. I know he's coming over with the same coordinator, but it's a little bit rich for my blood. I don't think it's quite so simple as plug and play a guy from the G5 into the Big 12 and, like, you're off to the races. No worries about it. So could it happen? It's the Big 12. I think anything could happen in the Big 12, as we've probably established at this point. But yeah, I don't think I'm quite as high on the Utes as maybe the rest of the public is right now.
So you're not as high on that quarterback, but there is a quarterback that I know you are high on, and it's Kansas State's Avery Johnson, who, by the way, last year really struggled. He had some ups and downs, had a learning curve, and honestly, you go back and watch some of those games last year, he probably cost them from going to a Big 12 championship and potentially going to a college football playoff. But now this year, everyone just seems like everything's corrected. Everything's great. All the returning production, it's all there. It's just going to be a breakout year. They're going to win the Big 12. It's Chris Klieman. That's what kind of feels like. They're just – Avery Johnson is here now.
Man, like, maybe it's the lettuce. Maybe it's the, like, the cool TikTok dances he was doing before. Like, I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, I am intoxicated with what Avery Johnson brings to the table. And I think for me, like, we talk about Devin Dampier – the comparison there is interesting because I think there were some moments, though, still where you look back at Avery Johnson, and there's definitely a lot to clean up, But I think the flashes paired with Chris Klieman, paired with another year in the system, paired with Dylan Edwards another year there. Again, I obviously don't have him in my Big 12 title game, so I can't, like, act like I'm all that high on him to where I think they're going to be a playoff team. But I – at the very least, I will sit down on Saturdays and happily watch number two play football. And I think at a pretty high level. I don't know that they're one of those teams, Grayson, like I just said, that's going to, you know, play for the conference. I think they're going to ruin somebody's shot in November. I think they'll be in it when we start November.
So a fun fact for you, JD, just because I wrote about this today, but Kansas State was 6-0 and averaged 37.3 points per game when Avery Johnson completed just over 60% of his passes. And when he didn't complete over 60% of his passes, they dropped to 25.3 points per game, and they went 3-4 on the season. That's the dip. 60%, that's not a lot to ask for. But if he gets there, they were pretty much unbeatable last year.
Bubble screens, right? Let's get to that 60% number, and then we've crossed the threshold, and right. Then we're just up and to the right the rest of the way. Because that's, at 60%, you might as well call the game. Like, if you get to the third quarter and you're completing over 60%, it's like, hey, K-State won because Avery completed. Like, I like that. I would also think – I'm rambling here. Colin Klein leaving Kansas State, I think that in itself – because Avery Johnson, I believe, was on the roster when Colin Klein was the OC there originally, correct? That's who he committed to. And then he gets to be the starting quarterback, and it's like, hey, everything you learned during that year before, like, flip it around. We gotta switch things up here. I'm curious how, like, his second year truly in the system is going to translate. Hopefully north of that 60% number if you're a K-State fan, but that's a great stat. That's really intriguing.
Yeah, that's a great point, because Colin Klein, Avery Johnson, that would have been a pretty awesome combo right there. Didn't get to quite see that fully, and you kind of hope for K-State fans that Avery does hit, because they had to sit back and watch Will Howard go to Ohio State and go win a national championship. So that cannot be an easy pill to swallow. So, JD, let's talk a little five-pack of Big 12 questions. We're going to just do these rapid-fire, just off the top of your head, where you're leaning with these different areas. So, first one, who is your top Big 12 Heisman contender?
I love Sawyer Robertson, and I think if Baylor makes the playoff, he's probably the lean. Josh Hoover, though, not to you know, keep going back to the Josh Hoover of it all. If I can't take Sawyer Robertson, I think what he did last year flew under the radar a little bit. I believe there were some SEC teams that wanted his services out of the transfer portal, so they took note of it. I think he was like 500 yards ahead of whoever was in third place in the Big 12 when it came to passing yards in that conference, with Shadur obviously being at the top. So I think he's going to do huge numbers. I think TC will be in the mix. I wouldn't be all that shocked if Josh Hoover has such a phenomenal statistical season with how they run it out there to where he finds himself in New York. And if they, I mean, if I'm wrong and they win the Big 12, then I mean, he could definitely be a guy to hoist that trophy.
Man, if they could just give him a run game, I think it would help him so much, because he had moments last year where, like against SMU, where he's having to just throw it a million times. And that, when you're so predictable, it does make things very, very tough for you. Okay, JD, who is your least favorite preseason Big 12 contender? So I'm talking maybe a top six team in preseason expectations who you're just not the biggest fan of.
Does Iowa State count? Like, are they top six outside in the odds? Okay, I would probably say that if I can't have Iowa State, it's so tough to, in my mind, I'm like, I see a bunch of different odds.
True.
Whether it be different books. I think it's tough because I just said all the good things about Texas Tech, so I can't go back on them and say I think they're overrated. I don't think they're a Big 12 title, like, lock, maybe some people think. Like, I love what they have. I love Joey McGuire. I would probably not take Texas Tech to be in that Big 12 title game as much as some other folks would. Is that a fair? Again, I think I'm maybe not doing this exercise properly, so tell me if I'm off base here. Does that count?
No, they are definitely one. I mean, if you think Tech's going to go like 8-4 this year, I think think that's right on brand right there with kind of how you feel. And I also think Iowa State, while they're not, I don't think many people are projecting them to win it. I have seen some people pick them. So, I mean, they can count too a little bit. So if you want to talk Iowa State a little bit, why are you not as high on them?
I mean, I lost those 2000 yard receivers, man. Like, that's really tough. I was listening to Joel Klatt the other day. I think he had Iowa State in his top 25, which I'm not disputing that at all, but the confidence came from, like, hey, talk to Rocco Beck on the sideline of his dad's, like, XFL or UFL game, whatever it was. And Rocco just said, hey, I like my receivers. I'm like, well, I think can't say I don't like my receivers. Can't say, hey, Joel, we're in trouble here, buddy. Like, I don't like this one bit. Love Rocco Beck, but I don't think Iowa State will be in that mix like they were a year ago. I did pull up the odds now to double down on just Utah. I didn't realize Utah, according to some books, has the best odds to win the conference. Yes. Is that, I don't think I was, because I've seen so many different numbers. I'm sure they've changed, but Utah at the top, to me, I'll dry erase my answer of Texas Tech. Utah, I don't buy that. I think they win 8 games. That'd be awesome. I don't think they're going to be a team that ends up in Jerry World.
Yeah, that they're, like I said, they are. People are trending in that direction right now for some reason. They love the Utes, and I get it with Kyle Whittingham. I mean, tough to bet against him. Okay, JD, who is the best team in the Big 12 who ends with a bad record? Last year, this was Kansas. They lost a bunch of close games. They end up 5-7. Is there a team that you just see, oh, man, at the end of the year, you look at all the advanced metrics, and you're like, they're pretty good, but their record doesn't say that?
I think there's so much expectation around what Arizona State is supposed to be. And I understand they caught their stride, you know, towards the end of the year. And I said, I think Sam Levin's the best quarterback in the conference right now. But there was a couple games even a year ago where you're like, man, the Texas State game, you're on the ropes. Like the game in against BYU, where that game came down to the wire, where we're ushering people off the field. Like K-State, you know, Avery Johnson was hot and cold, and they won that game by 10 points. Like, same thing with what we mentioned with SMU early on in the show. There's a lot of one-score magic going on here. I mean, pulling up the game against Mississippi State, that was a 7-point win against, don't care what conference you're in, you're a bad team, what Mississippi State was last year. So I'm curious to see how much that carries over. I really like Dillingham. I even like Kanye Udo from Army, who transferred in there to kind of replace what Scadaboo is. But the one-score stuff makes me very leery, Grayson. So I'll say that we could sit here and say, Arizona State, 6 wins, but like they were in every single game, and that's a good football team.
Right. It's definitely that way in the Big 12. You have a lot of teams. If you lose those close games, your record's going to change. I'm kind of high on Arizona State. I like their quarterback, and I like their offensive and defensive line, but history tells you you're probably going to have a regression after winning that many close games. You're probably going to have a lot more close games. So, okay. As far as the Big 12 goes, who is your dark horse pick? Like, who is your team from the bottom of the league that you're just thinking, man, I think that these guys could potentially find themselves, I don't know if they're going to make it to Jerry World, but maybe find themselves kind of in the mix as we get to the end of the year.
So I went back and looked at the odds to make sure I wasn't giving you a team that was actually like favored to win the conference. It's like, this guy just picked Kansas State to be the dark horse. The way Colorado has chosen to use the portal this offseason, to me, speaks volumes as to how they view their roster right now. Because those first 2 years, it's like, I mean, Hayes Fawcett must have had just arthritis in the fingers with how much he was putting together Colorado edits via the 40 to 50 guys every single year. And now in their third year, it's like almost cut in half, which to me says, all right, Deion Sanders, based on what he's not doing via the portal, feels good enough about where this roster's at. And they lose Shador. They lose the Heisman Trophy winner and Travis Hunter. There's a lot of guys, though, Grayson, that I'm sure you're well aware of, but I don't think the national public is right now, that I think are going to be studs. Like Joe Williams was the American Athletic Conference Freshman of the Year last year at Tulsa, making ridiculous plays during practice right now. Every social clip I see is like Joe Williams just mossing someone with one hand. Omarion Miller tore up USC 2 years ago. Had a down year last year, but like it was a stacked room. It is what it is. If Caden Salter's closer to what he was in 23 than 24 and he starts for you, I think Colorado could be one of those teams we sit back and say, this is just like the Big 12. The year they lose the Heisman Trophy winner, they go win the conference.
Wow, that'd be insane. I've been doing these predictions for the season, and Colorado just keeps on jumping out to me a little bit. Just, man, I'm picking them to win this game. Man, I'm picking them to win again. It's just interesting. I think last year, because of how much improvement they had on the defensive side, it's really interesting to see this year's team and kind of sit there and go, man, their defense should be pretty good. And this year, unlike last year, their run game should be so much better with Salter at quarterback. The issue will be the pass game. We'll see how much of a step that takes forward. But you're right. If Salter is the runner that we saw a few years ago, man, Colorado could be a very interesting dark horse. And I feel like people have written them off because of the offseason they had with Deion being sick for as long as he was. And I think that might be the wrong decision by people to kind of just sweep them under the rug and say they're not going to be a bowl team this year.
I think, too, if you're looking for a reason to play for your head coach, everything that went on with that, where everyone that doesn't know he's sick is kind of questioning, hey, where's his loyalty with Colorado? Does he want to be there? And that news comes out and everyone's like, oh, my gosh, like, and he didn't say a word about that and just kind of went about his business. And then once he's okay, you know, announces it to the world, I think if you're in that locker room, you're like, I'm ready to go to war for Deion Sanders if that's my head coach.
Absolutely. So, JD, let's look nationally really quick. I made a point when I saw you release your college football playoff. I just kind of, you know, scrolled through Twitter a little bit. I wanted to see how people felt about, you know, your decisions and the picks that you made.
Yeah, risky mentions to look through. Yeah.
Very risky. Very, very risky. I felt like the three ones that you got called out the most for, actually four, were Baylor, Texas A&M, James Madison, and then your national champion, which was LSU. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of call outs for all of those picks. I didn't feel like much of your stuff was very controversial at all, except for probably A&M. I think that's probably the one that is probably, I would think, the most universally controversial. But what'd you think going through your mentions, and just, did it make you rethink anything? Did it reaffirm anything for you?
Yeah, I mean, I rethink my life every time I go through my mentions. Mostly like, why did I decide to post this? I think doing that exercise of going through, you know, different conferences, win totals, records, okay, this is how I think it'll shape up. Like, I think it's never been harder for us, Grayson, to predict the national champion, because it used to be when your conference, okay, what's your conference schedule? Okay, you get to your conference title game. Okay, do you win? Okay, we like your draw there. Okay, now you win two games, you're a national champion. Now it's like, did you win 10? Because if you did, you're probably in, unless you're Miami from a year ago and you end up getting walled off at the last minute. Okay, you're in the college football playoff. What's your draw? Do you have SMU and Boise State, or are you Ohio State where you got to go play Tennessee and then the Big Ten champ, and then you know, go on a run? So that, plus the fact that it's like 3 to 4 games to win a national championship, I think it just puts so much more emphasis on who you have at quarterback. And another top 25 just dropped. I was taken aback a little bit that like 12 of the top 25, Grayson, like a new quarterback, 7 of the top 10 breaking a new quarterback. So for me, I know the Big 12, you know, isn't really even dealing with this right now because they brought everybody back at quarterback, which is phenomenal for that conference. It'll be a lot of fun. But that's a big reason why I was like, okay, A&M, I think I trust their quarterback. LSU, I definitely trust your quarterback. And so with that being the case, like that was kind of how I arrived at a lot of those. Anytime you got to that toss-up scenario, you're like, I think the roster's somewhat even. I'm going with the quarterback.
I would say that the only team that you picked inside your top four where I'm kind of like, do you trust their quarterback is Ohio State. Because I think Oregon, Dante Moore, like the talent we all know is there. LSU and Clemson both have solidified quarterbacks with Nuss and Klubnik. But Ohio State, I'm guessing it's just because you believe in the infrastructure that they built there, the talent, the depth, and then you just think someone will rise to the occasion with those receivers that they have, which are truly elite.
It's crazy. The last time Ohio State had a quarterback that didn't lead the conference in passing was Kyle McCord in 2023. But before that, it wasn't like until 2017, like pre-JT Barrett. So like the bottom line is, you know this, Grace, like Ryan Day, one, is going to recruit a good quarterback. And then two, whoever's playing quarterback there is throwing to freaking dudes. Like even Kyle McCord got a lot of flack for how, you know, lackluster he was in Columbus. And then the next year he goes and leads all of college football in passing. So it wasn't like it was a miss by Ryan Day on the eval or bringing in Kyle McCord. Like it just kind of, you know, how the chips fell. And he was still second in the Big Ten. So it's a roundabout way to say, I still trust the process. You know, shout out Joel Embiid. I still trust the process when it comes to how Ohio State does things. And then they've stacked so many recruiting classes. It's hard to see them having some massive drop off to where, you know, they're not a team that's right there at the end. The one other thing I will say now, not to be long-winded, it was really fascinating and eye-opening for me a year ago to see Ohio State hit the playoff, be a new team. For a lot of these first-year guys that, you know, we are potentially trusting, if you're Julian Sain and you finish your 12 games, maybe 13 with the Big Ten championship game, to me, once you hit the playoff, like you are no longer, in my eyes, a first-year starter. You're past that 12-game threshold. Like we should expect more, and you should be more comfortable. So long way to say, yeah, I like the Buckeyes still this year.
So we got to talk about your national champion really quick before I let you go. You chose LSU. I'm very surprised you didn't have a rematch of the Texas Bowl in your national championship.
Oh, yeah.
Baylor lost to them. Got to see firsthand Nuss and all those receivers, Aaron Anderson, Chris Hilton, the guys they brought in, Nick Anderson. They got a lot of weapons. What makes you so intrigued with LSU? I know they have talent, but what is going to allow them to take that big step forward? Because I think to a lot of people that I listen to nationally, they kind of think LSU is just a notch below, you know, your favorites, I think, in the SEC.
And I think the reasoning behind that for the most of the folks that like I get to listen to as well is, well, but Brian Kelly hasn't. And I'm like, yes, I think that's a fair rebuttal. But also people were saying the same thing about Kirby Smart and then he won too. People said the same thing about Ryan Day last year and then he won it. So I see where they're coming from. But I look at the way that they have built this roster this offseason. And yeah, they got some top end talent. Like the receivers obviously are phenomenal, but I get excited for LSU about like the depth. I think that they are truly a different team in the month of November this year than they were a year ago. I think they're built with a little more snow tire to them. Not they're going to have to go play in the snow, but they may be able to withstand a little more than they were a year ago. And I think year two of that Blake Baker defense plus the quarterback, like all those things to me combined to where I just think LSU is maybe the most well-rounded and the most composed this year. In a year with a lot of newness and uncertainty.
Absolutely. Well, JD, before I let you go, you got to tell the people what you have going on. Where should they watch your show, The Hard Count? Tell the people what's going on there at On3.
Yeah, I mean, well, first, make sure you're subscribed here. That's the obvious part. But yeah, if you want to catch more of our work over on the On3 YouTube channel, Grayson, much like you, like we're full go now, baby. It's college football season. Like it's been like 200 plus days since we had the national title game. We're full go. So we're full go over there on the On3 YouTube channel and then at JD Pakel on all the social medias.
Awesome, man. Well, that is it for today. Thanks to JD Pakel for joining the show. And as always, thanks for listening. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.
Check out Join Sikkim 365 Premium on a $1 for 1 month trial to read our experts' notes and insights. Know about high school commits, off-season transfers, coaching staff changes, and so much more before the rest. Also, download the Sikkim 365 app on your iPhone today to get instant notifications of breaking news, read up on the latest inside info, easily interact with other Baylor fans on our forums, and get alerts for anything published by your favorite staff members.